Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where today we're asking, what makes good Christmas TV? Christmas is that time of year when it's okay to watch too much TV. In Britain, there's a tradition of gathering around the TV set on Christmas Day after a large turkey dinner and a few sherries too many. And it's the one time of year that scheduled broadcasting still seems to thrive. There's always plenty to choose from, special episodes of classic sitcoms and period dramas. There's usually a couple of children's books turned into magical and often touching TV productions. On today's show, then, I'll be discussing what makes good Christmas TV with Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph, and we'll be spinning the globe to find out what happens on TV in December around the world, too. That's all coming up on this festive edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Do stay tuned. And Alice Vincent joins us. Thank you very much for coming in. And Alice, we are dangerously close to the Christmas season, to the Christmas specials, and that's what we're talking about today. What happens when the Christmas specials or the trailers for the Christmas specials start getting trotted out on the TV? Do your hackles rise, or do you think, oh, do you nuzzle into the sofa that bit more comfortably and look forward to the Christmas period and its televisual offerings?
I feel like after the season of Hygge, we all had to snuggle into everything at all times.
Yeah.
What I like about the Christmas adverts for like the BBC and BBC Two and Channel 4 and stuff is that after the kind of the huge phenomenon of the supermarket Christmas adverts, which has happened over the last few years, there's something delightfully old school about seeing everyone slightly rosy-cheeked and chinking and some optimistic music. Like, I you know what, my cynicism goes out of the window for about 36 hours of the year.
Okay.
And it is Christmas special time, I'd say.
I think that's good. I think that's a long period of time with, through which not to live with cynicism. I like it a lot, and it is the Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
To what extent, I wonder, do you think we understand the contemporary Christmas through TV, actually, because there is so much. I wonder if it is the same in other countries. We absorb so much Christmas spirit through the TV. The BBC and ITV, the scheduled channels, we can go on and talk about the difference between the online channels and the terrestrial channels and the scheduled channels a little bit later on. But I wonder how much our contemporary Christmas traditions are seen through the prism of television, because there are a lot of favourites return. They come back at double the length at Christmas time, all the rest of it. As a reviewer and as a punter, what's it like with you and your family, I wonder?
In my family, we don't do that kind of thing where, firstly, we're one of those weird families that has Christmas dinner in the evening, which I gather
we
is
sometimes
unconventional.
Do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Most people aim for about 3, 4pm. So we normally miss a lot of the kind of programmed TV.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we don't all kind of... There are certain things. Like, I'm obsessed with watching The Muppets Christmas Carol first thing on Christmas morning.
Well, it's one of the best films ever made.
That's how Christmas starts for me.
Good.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I think Britain as a whole, talking generally, has a weird obsession with Christmas TV, and I think it's wonderful. I love how important the Radio Times Christmas edition is.
Yeah.
I know people who spent their childhood making a fake version of the Radio Times to pass out to their family because they loved the Christmas schedule so much. You know, there was this huge controversy when Elf stopped being screened on Channel 4 in around mid-December on a Sunday afternoon because it was such a national phenomenon. People would tweet along with it. Like, it was a huge thing, and then Sky took it away, and everyone was like, "You've stolen Christmas."
Stolen Christmas.
Yeah,
we're obsessed,
and I love that we're obsessed with it.
Is there one thing that says, I suppose, The Muppets Christmas Carol, but is there one piece of TV, i.e. something that is a regular series, whether it's a soap opera or something that, a sitcom, whatever it might be, that comes back at Christmas and actually bears up? Which of those shows has survived the jump from regular show to Christmas special, I wonder?
Well, I'm really tempted to say Sherlock.
Yeah.
Except last year, it was a real Horlicks. But Sherlock, you know, the Benedict Cumberbatch version is always very good, Mark Gatiss. And it went kind of slightly odd last year, but it's coming back again this year, and I think it will be good. That's worth watching. Doctor Who is always a family pleaser, and it's always a bit nuts and funny. But the interesting one this year is Great British Bake Off, because, of course, halfway through the season this year, we learnt that Bake Off was being sold to Channel 4, and what we were actually watching without any preparation was the final series of Bake Off as we knew it. And it's coming back for 2 episodes at Christmas, which is quite exciting, but also, is it going to be weird? Can you just slip back in if you don't have a whole series to get involved with?
Okay. Know? And this is an interesting thing, because there is something obviously ineffably Christmassy and home about the homeliness of the Bake Off.
Yeah.
The idea of cakes, clearly. I mean, this is sort of prime Christmas TV fare, I guess. So I wonder, I mean, are they going to pull out all the stops? I mean, this is going to be an emotional swan song for many of the production team working on it in the BBC, and also for many of you that like the old school crew, because half the people are not making
three quarters. Yeah.
So, by the way, let's tell our listeners who's staying and who's going.
So, Paul Hollywood is staying.
He's staying.
He's staying. He's moving to Channel 4. Less said about that, the better. Mel and Sue, who are the kind of lively, hilarious presenters, they famously said, "We're not going with the dough," and they jumped ship, and Mary Berry also jumped ship. And now Mary's got her own new cookery programme, and we're looking forward to seeing what Mel and Sue do next. And I don't know how many people really care about Paul Hollywood, but he's going to be at Channel 4.
Okay, so there we have it. And that seems like that will be a big... I mean, that's one of those ones as well, that there is a news story attached to this.
Yeah.
There is also an idea of the values of the BBC versus the values of commercial television. There were quite a lot of subplots going along in what is... A factual show here, right?
Yeah, and also because they're bringing back a lot of well-loved former contestants. So, you know, it is like kind of seeing your favourite stars come back and be in the bake-off tent. And as you say, it's going to be bittersweet, no pun intended, for a lot of viewers.
Now, you mentioned things that have survived the transition from regular good programme to a good Christmas show, Christmas special. The BBC Sherlock and Doctor Who, you know, obviously staples for many a decade. They've both got sort of Christmassy elements of gothic, and you know, they've got these kind of supernatural fairy tale kind of Christmassy thing going on as well. What about things like soap operas? Because they all get involved in it. There's you know, everyone gets around the piano in the Queen Vic, which is the pub in EastEnders, I should tell our international listeners. What happens with this? I mean, this is, we talked about at the beginning, this is where characters that have hated each other end up kissing, or the romance that has been sort of simmering finally boils.
Someone discovers
Eve.
A legitimate child who is their lover. Yeah,
exactly. What's going on here, Alice? Why is there the temptation to bring this all to a head at Christmas time, I wonder?
I think because you've got eyeballs on the telly. Mm. I think everyone is sort of, frankly, what I love, which basically underscores, you know, the British obsession with TV at Christmas, is that actually there's not very much to do at Christmas. Unless you're very lucky and you have a family who you enjoy huge, enormous convivial dinners with, you know, it's something to do when you're all locked in the house in your pyjamas, isn't it? So it's quite good to have a really explosive hour-long episode of EastEnders. And, you know, I don't even watch the soaps, but I could name you so many incredible soap moments that, you know, happen in the Christmas special. And I did watch Emmerdale's Christmas special last year, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, despite having no idea who anyone was. Like, it's good, fun, completely trashy TV.
I mean, that's presumably is the funny thing as well. You as a reviewer, you have to kind of take that hat off when you walk in the door, especially at Christmas time, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's that.
Hence the 36 hours of cynicism.
When you go around someone's house and they go, "We all like this, Alice, you're a TV reviewer."
But saying that, there are some really, really brilliant like things to be critically enjoyed at Christmas. And the BBC does do that really well, actually. Like it does feel like it's the time of year when they have the monopoly on this and scheduled TV more widely, because it's a lovely feeling to think that you are sitting down and watching something and the rest of the country is doing exactly the same thing. And that's why when, you know, ECO Trot comes to mind, which was the BBC One's adaptation of a kind of lesser-known Roald Dahl short story in 2014. And they got Dustin Hoffman in and they got Judi Dench in, and it was utterly charming. It was just wonderful. You know, you had these brilliant actors. They shot it in this incredible brutalist housing complex, which shouldn't work, but it did. And that's when you're like, this is license fee payer worthiness. Like, this is good.
It's very difficult to open anything that has an interest in the media and not hear about the growing power of the money and the muscle and the commissioning power and all the rest of it, the brain drain from corporations like the BBC to Netflix and Amazon, etc. What happens at Christmas, though, is possibly a different story.
Yeah, so Netflix have tried to do this before. Last year, they had a kind of a Christmas special with Bill Murray in it. On paper, probably someone sat down and said, "Let's commission it. Everyone loves Bill Murray. Bill Murray singing in a suit on a piano with some..." It'd be like Bing Crosby, but funny. And it wasn't. It was a bit rubbish. And I think part of that is because, you know, you could kind of stick it on whenever you wanted.
Yeah.
You could kind of stick it on when you were doing your ironing or have a think about it, but also because they were trying to replicate a nostalgia and a charm that maybe wasn't there.
And this is an interesting thing. So there is something to do with the group hug that is scheduled television.
Yeah.
At certain moments, at certain key moments, sporting moments, televisual moments, etc., we go to those big things to kind of get the version of the truth that we like the best, I suppose.
Yeah.
And a version of coziness that we're very comfortable with. Do you think Netflix is an Amazon? Are they too young to have this? Are they too... Do we know that they're slightly big money, slightly cynical big money-making machines, and that we trust them to give us sort of groundbreaking, genre-busting drama and stuff? But actually, when it comes to giving us something a bit more sort of cozy, we kind of shy away from them.
I think... Actually, it comes down to where you go for comfort. And I still think that scheduled TV is hugely nostalgic for a lot of people. You know, Christmas is a time when people go back to their family homes. They spend time with each other. They kind of spend time with the people they grew up with. And so it feels a bit weird to be like, oh, we're just going to stick Netflix on. Like, I think it was interesting that last Christmas, a lot of American celebrities and also normal people got obsessed with Making a Murderer. They spent their couple of days off over Christmas getting thoroughly glued to the Netflix documentary, which was about this kind of really grisly, unpleasant situation in Wisconsin several years ago. And it took us quite a long time to wake up to it because we hadn't been sitting around watching Making a Murderer. We were sitting watching Mrs. Brown's Boys with our mum fighting over what's going to be on the telly and whether the Sprouts are overdone or not. It's a totally different thing, I think.
More innocent times, perhaps. So give us a bit of a top three. What's going to be on the Vincent television come Yuletide?
Well, I think we'll probably be watching Bake Off.
Yeah.
Even though Paul Hollywood's on it. Yeah.
Okay.
I think actually To Walk Invisible looks quite good. I think it's, so this is a period costume offering, lavish.
Love it, love it. Okay.
But one time a year. And it's interesting because it's about how the Bronte sisters sort of found their writing niche. And obviously the Bronte sisters didn't live very long and had horribly tragic lives, but that's probably levels it out about right for me, I think. Not too saccharine.
Yes.
And I think also, maybe because there are little people in my family as well, I think we might be sitting down to watch We're Going on a Bear Hunt. Because the animation is something that telly does really nicely at Christmas.
Of course it does. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, right back to Raymond Briggs and all the rest of it.
Exactly.
There is nostalgia in spades. Tell us a little bit about that one, where we might be able to see it.
So that one is on the BBC as well. And it looks lovely. The BBC do animation really beautifully for Christmas every year. Sometimes Channel 4 do it as well. Things that come to mind, The Snow Dog, as you say, yeah. Raymond Briggs. There's something very soothing, comforting about watching those animated kind of pencil colour sketches. They're normally only about half an hour, and it's a time when everyone sort of quietens down a little bit. Maybe have as is if you don't like it, but it's, yeah.
It's all right. It's a time to embrace the children that we all fairly recently might have been. I want to come around to the Vincents for Christmas. It sounds amazing. I love all that stuff. I can almost hear the crackling fire. I can smell the sherry.
My mum will overfeed you.
Okay, good. It's a date. Alice Vincent, Telegraph's entertainment expert, as ever. Thank you very much. For the rest of the show, we're going to go to Canada, Ireland and Australia to find out about a few festive traditions around the globe. Let's start in Canada, where the Globe and Mail's TV critic John Doyle tells us what unites the country around the box in December.
It's always a reminder, times of the year like this, just how big and diverse Canada is. So, for instance, in the east in Canada, in Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, there's a long tradition of folk and Celtic music. So there would be a sort of Celtic music Christmas, but that would be mainly of interest to a portion of the audience in Canada. Out west, in Alberta and other provinces, country music is very popular. You always get a country music Christmas specials with some very big stars, but that's not of interest to everyone. So there are really only two things that unify the country around the television at Christmas. One of the things that is traditional around the Christmas time on television and on radio in Canada and is appreciated by everyone from every region, I think, of every background, is an acknowledgement of our peacekeepers who are around the world in far-flung places, very distant from home and family. The United Nations peacekeeping means a great deal to Canadians because UN peacekeeping as we know it now is essentially the creation of a Canadian diplomat, Lester Pearson, who later became our prime minister, and also won the Nobel Peace Prize for his work on this. So Canadians tend to think of themselves as a peaceful people, as peace brokers, as peacekeepers, rather than warmongers. So we have peacekeepers all over the world, and throughout news programs around the Christmas period, time is always devoted to saying hello to our peacekeepers and them saying hello to their friends and family in Canada. I think it touches something in the Canadian spirit when attention is given around the Christmas period to people who are doing this work on behalf of Canada all over the world.
Those are pretty bars.
Royal Canadian Air Force is a comedy troupe that has been in existence for decades in Canada. It had a very long run on CBC radio here and then a fairly long run on television. It's a political social satire show, but it has been off the air, certainly off television, for many years now. However, the audience seems to expect that once a year on New Year's Eve, the Royal Canadian Air Force will return and give their take on the year in Canada, the year in politics, the year in social and media changes. Their take on the year is expected, even though it is quite hokey. It's one of those sort of, I think, comforting things about television in Canada at this time of the year, is that people know the Air Force, no matter how ancient they are going to be back one more time for their unique and special and old-fashioned take on the year in Canada.
John Doyle there on Canadian TV. Now we're going to go to Ireland to discuss the main broadcast event of the year for the Emerald Isle, the Late Late Toy Show. The programme, which began in the 1970s, is most beloved by its viewers. It's one of the most watched programmes every year and receives a global audience. The idea is that RTE's Friday night chat show, the Late Late Show, is revamped into a Technicolor Santa's Grotto of toys. Host Ryan Tubridy is joined in the studio by children and celebrities to review the best toys out that year. It's a big, bright production. This year's Bonanza had a Jungle Book theme, opening with an extravagant set dance piece with kids dressed as zebras and snakes. We spoke to the show's producer, Catherine Drohan, about why a show about toys has been such a massive hit.
The Late Late Toy Show is a really unique Irish programme. It's on once a year, just before Christmas, a couple of weeks before Christmas. And it started as a segment, an item on The Late Late Show, which is Ireland's longest running chat show and probably one of the longest running chat shows in the world. The show itself, The Late Late Show, has been running for 55, 56 years. And the toy show, The Late Late Toy Show, has been running in its entirety for probably since about 1975. And it began when a researcher on The Late Late brought in toys that were coming up for Christmas, the hot toys for Christmas, and reviewed them on the show. The show itself is a mixture of performances by kids, demos, so toy testers who are kids, and our host Ryan Tubridy singing and dancing these days, and also chatting to the kids and having fun with them and talking to them about what toys they are showing us. So all the kids that you see on screen are normal children that watch the show at home with their parents. You know, they're not kind of professional children as such, professional performers or anything. They apply each year, they send in thousands of demos and demo auditions, and we watch them and we audition them. So on screen what you're seeing is really kind of five or six, depending on the year, performances that vary from a cover of Coldplay's Fix You to a really beautiful version of Lost Boy to maybe a Christmas carol or a classical piece. And then also you have that interspersed with kids who bring on their favourite toys, so the hottest toys of the year, boys and girls, different ages, from the youngest toy tester is about 5 years old. And then that goes up to about 12, and that person might be demoing kind of technical stuff and drones and the kind of the hottest gadgets. And you're basically watching them interact with their host, have laughs. There's a ride-on section where all the different bikes come out and there are motorised cars and motorbikes and stuff. And that's all in front of a live studio audience of about 200 people, 204 people, of which there are literally over 100,000 applicants for those studio tickets.
Okay, you're going to help bring on what we call the ride-ons. These are the new bikes and scooters and things. I'd like you to name the people that are coming on, where they're from, what age they are, and I'll help you by just whisking them in and out. Right. So are you ready to go?
Yep.
Who's our first child, Fergal?
Ife Lua.
Yep.
Age 5, from Dublin.
Here she is.
And the Rachel Tribe.
So the audience for the toy show is the usual Late Late Show audience plus everyone else in the country, pretty much. The most recent toy show had 1.39 million viewers, and that's a 77% share. So really, when you look at the figures for the toy show, it's pretty much everyone watching TV to a certain extent. So you've got, it's cross-generational. You've got grandparents, parents, kids, you know, young people, millennials, friends, everyone kind of meet, either meeting their families or meeting up to watch the show. There's toy show parties. I know that the London Irish Centre had a toy show party in London. It's watched on the player over 102 countries. So really every kind of demographic tunes into the toy show because it is such an Irish institution at this stage.
Size library. I have John Joe Brennan, who's 8, from Paris and Roscommon, depending on where you get him on a given week. What were you reading for us?
I was reading James and the Giant Peach.
Oh, by the wonderful Roald Dahl.
Yes.
Did you like that?
Yes, I did.
And why do you like Roald Dahl stories?
Well, because I like the way he talks, and he always knows how to express himself in front of children of all ages, and I find him very poetic, and also that for children, fantasy always comes first.
It's a celebration of childhood and Christmas. It's like a big warm hug. The host, Ryan Tuberty, I think, since he's taken over, really has elevated it to something so kind of unique and powerful that, you know, there's dual levels of kind of comedy going on, and there's a nod to the parents as well as the kids, and you try to bring everything to it, and just it's pure entertainment at this stage. And it has kind of moved from being a show where kids come on and show toys to really a kind of an entertainment show with kids.
If we gave you a rugby jersey, would you wear it to when you're watching the rugby matches?
Yeah.
Okay. If Jamie Heaslip were to give you the jersey, would that be okay?
Yeah.
Would you like to say hello to him?
Yeah.
There he is.
Hey, Aaron.
Hey. How are you, buddy? Jamie!
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, I'm good.
Thanks for coming in. Evan, what would you like to say to Jamie Heaslip?
I have no idea.
You said earlier on that you thought he was handsome. Do you think he's handsome in real life?
Mom said that he loves the
pig. Where's your mom?
She's out the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you could have a chat with his mum after this.
We'll see what my wife has to say.
Yeah. I just had a chat. But that'd be nice.
It kicks off Christmas, really, for a lot of people in Ireland. You know, a lot of people, right, kids traditionally have always written their Santa letter after the toy show. So Santa gets all his letters after that. Obviously, a lot of people put up their trees after the toy show. So it really is kind of the unofficial kickoff to Christmas, which is brilliant. It's so exciting, and it's such a privilege. It honestly is a privilege to be part of it. And I think that everyone just really gets in the mood then after that.
Catherine Drowen, producer of The Late Late Toy Show there. Finally, we're going to go to Australia, where the must-watch TV show in December is Carols by Candlelight. This is an all-singing, all-dancing variety show filmed live in Melbourne. Australian celebrities who can hold a note or two get together to perform Christmas classics on stage, while the rest of the country gathers around the TV set to watch them doing it. And it's a big thing over there. It's all about who's on and what they're wearing, as host Lisa Wilkinson explains.
Welcome back to Vision Australia's Carols by Candlelight, proudly presented by Maya. Now, still to come, how's this for a list?
This is the 79th year of Carols by Candlelight, if you can believe it. So it actually predates television. And it's held in Melbourne at the Sydney Meyer Music Bowl, which is a beautiful venue. It's partly undercover and largely out in the open, but it's a beautiful bowl-like shape, where thousands of Melburnians turn up every Christmas Eve to watch pretty much most of Australia's favourite performers perform a combination of traditional Christmas carols and, you know, your sort of popular Christmas songs. So Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You gets a good workout just as much as the first Noel does as well.
And if you feel like standing up and having a dance, we're at the very end of the night.
Feel those beautiful lights.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing.
What is it about this show that really captures the essence of Christmas and gets the whole of Australia watching it?
Well, even in 2016, there's something about returning to hearth and home and, you know, the Christmas carols that we all grew up with, and just people stopping, taking pause while they're wrapping presents and, you know, getting the turkey on for the next day. There's just something very old school in the most wonderful way that seems to really unite people. And it's very rare that somebody does it at this time of year tell me how much they are looking forward to, you know, the same tradition that they've grown up with, and that is to have the TV on Christmas Eve and just remember what Christmas is really meant to be all about.
So this is Christmas. What have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun.
I've spoken to a lot of our resident Australians here at Monocle 24, and they have told me that it's all about the outfits and that there's a lot of outfit changes. Have you got your outfits planned for this year? And do you know, is that an exciting part of being a presenter on the show for you?
Yeah, it's fun because, you know, every year I help to create, you know, a beautiful outfit. And so, you know, I get to have quite a big say in it, which is fun. But yeah, I don't think I'm sort of overemphasising the fact that it's one of the most anticipated dresses on Australian television every year. So unlike, you know, your average awards show where there's 50 frocks that parade down the red carpet, there's only sort of one specific frock that I get to wear. So, you know, everyone's got an opinion on the frock, so I do feel a lot of pressure.
Oh, come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh, come ye, oh, come ye to Bethlehem.
What is television in Australia like at Christmas generally? Is it quite festive? Is there a tradition of everyone gathering around the TV set and watching specific TV shows?
For Carols by Candlelight, absolutely. It's one of the biggest rating shows on Australian television every year. So, you know, it's a huge honour. This will be my ninth year. So it's a real honour to be out the front because I grew up with it as well. But in Australia, we love our cricket, and that is also on the Nine Network. You know, in Australia, at Christmas, as opposed to London or New York or Paris, it is stinking hot most Christmas days. So we really wrestle with the fact that we've all grown up with images of snowmen representing Christmas and, you know, snow on fir trees, but we don't experience that at all. What we experience is, you know, lunch that's kind of a mixture of seafood and a barbecue and watching the cricket on Channel 9. So that's what Christmas looks like for us.
All I want for Christmas is you.
Merry Christmas!
Delta Goodrum once again! Give it up for Delta Goodrum!
That was Lisa Wilkinson from Channel 9's Carols by Candlelight, which will air on Christmas Eve. Sorry, listeners down under. And that brings us to the end of today's show. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week when we'll be recapping our favourite moments of 2016. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.